529 and Cork 412 metres medium wave. The long note is presented now by Robbie Hannan.
Hello and welcome. Richard Lewis O'Mealy was an Uilleann piper and pipe maker who was born in a remote corner of County Westmeath in 1873. He spent most of his life, however, in Belfast, where he established himself as one of the leading pipe makers of his day.
Certainly he did a tremendous amount for the pipes at that time. He was one of the few individuals that managed to keep the tradition going, and that was crucial. Pipers were able to go along and get their pipes fixed, they were able to get them readed, and they were able to purchase new sets. And I think this was absolutely crucial to the continuation of pipe playing and pipe making in the north.
Smash the Windows, played by Richard O'Mealy, and it comes from one of a number of records he made for the BBC in Belfast in August 1943. O'Mealy often broadcast on the BBC, and Willie Reynolds, the piper from Walderstown, County Westmeath, remembers those programmes.
I heard them myself. It was always on St. Patrick's Day. They had an Irish programme on the BBC, and I always looked forward to hear that. I thought it was terrific that time, you know. We had a battery set, I think it was, where I was able to get BBC on it. That was the Belfast programme, I'd say, BBC Belfast. But I heard them for 2 years on St. Patrick's Day. I look forward to hearing them then.
Richard O'Mealy was born on the 22nd of October, 1873, in the townland of Temple Cross, not far from Ballinacarrigy, about 7 miles from Mullingar. In compiling this programme, we met with Mick Kilmurry from Ballallan, a close neighbour of the O'Mealys. He knew all the family well, and he gave us an insight into when the O'Mealys first settled in Temple Cross with the arrival of Richard's great-grandfather, Tom.
He came as a carpenter to the building of Shifton from the O, on a machine along with a mason.
And he settled in Temple Cross?
He settled in Temple Cross, they say that there is a church there.
What year would that have been?
Oh, God knows. And Johnny then was his son, John, and he was Larry's father. And they were all pipers, every one of them.
Piping then was very much a family tradition. Richard's great-grandfather, Tom, Charlie, his grandfather, and his father, Larry, were all pipers before him. Piping was, at this time, very strong in Westmeath, and two of the best pipers in the Temple Cross area were Peter Brown and Robert Shaw. Living in such an environment, it was no wonder that young Richard was to take up the pipes. Richard's father, Larry Mealy, married Letitia Lewis of Beliver, County Meath, in the Church of Ireland's Kilbixie, near Ballinacarrigy, on the 21st of January, 1857. They had 9 children.
Edward, my father. William, an uncle. John, an uncle. Robert, an uncle. Kate and Letitia, 2 aunts. There was 2 other aunts of mine, which were, one was drowned in the lake, Loch Iron, and the other was killed near Ballycarrigy.
And a lot of these people were musicians?
Yes. Edward, my father, he used to play the pipes. John, an uncle, a fiddler. Katie, an aunt. He was a good concertina player. And Richard, of course, the piper in Belfast.
That was Victor Mealy from Ballahug, County Westmeath, a nephew of Richard's, giving us the names of Richard's brothers and sisters. The name Mealy is an anglified form of the Irish O'Malley, which was a common surname in Mayo. In Temple Cross, Richard's family name is pronounced Melia, other local pronunciations being Melee and Mallee. It was Richard himself who restored the O to his surname, and the original Irish form, O'Malley, is found stamped on many of the sets of pipes he made. Since we know that Richard's great-grandfather came from Mayo, it's worth pointing out that Patrick Lynch, who began collecting material for Edward Bunting's famous collection, met up with a certain piper, one Billy O'Malley, in Castlebar in 1802. Whether this man was related to Richard O'Malley, we can't say for sure, but it's interesting to note that there were pipers of that name in Mayo almost 200 years ago. Richard's father, Larry Mealy, had a 20-acre farm in Temple Cross, but as well as working on his own land, he also worked on a local estate.
Good buddy boy, Tristan, from, let's say, who this had to be on James Evers, had it before that. And good buddy Atara, the flower man, bought it. And he kept a staff of men working, and Larry used to steal them. Now, he run the show.
Here's another piece of piping from Richard. It's a tune called O'Malley's Hornpipe, and it would appear that he composed it himself. O'Malley's Hornpipe. The year before Richard was born, a tragedy struck the Mealy family on the 15th of August, 1872.
They went to Ballinalake by boat. That's the way they used to travel those days, to go to Ballinalake across Loch Éireann. My grandfather and my aunts and uncles were all young people at that time, and they crossed the lake to Ballinalake. That was a favourite way of going, travelling in those days, to get a drink on a Sunday. While they were in Ballinalake, they had one too many. And on the journey back across the lake, a storm rose when they were about midway across the lake. The boat started to fill with water, and they had a saucepan or a can for teeming out the water. Now, they had a man with them, I can't think of his name at the moment. He was a good swimmer. My grandfather asked him about this can to team out the boat. He says, I know nothing about your can. And he stood up and stepped on the side of the boat, and the whole lot fell into the water. Now, my grandfather had his pipes with him at the time. The main part of the pipes stayed with him because he had them, they were strapped to his body. But two of the drones become undone and got lost in the mud and the water of the lake. Now, one of my aunts was drowned. She was found the next morning at the edge of the lake. The others survived. Now, a lot of people got together and got boats and drags to search for these drones. And after some days and nights, they recovered them from the bottom of the lake.
The young Richard O'Malley received his schooling locally.
My late uncle, Richard O'Malley, went to a local school in Ballinacargy.
He went to school to Ballinacargy first, the first school in Ballinacargy. And he went from that to Wilson's Hospital. It's known as Wilson's Hospital. you see, which was a college, and is a college, yes. The Diocesan College for the Church of Ireland.
Where is it?
It's there before you go into Moultrie, you went from here.
Moultrie Farnham?
Yes. And it's known as Wilson's Hospital. An old fellow by the name of Wilson owned it 100 years ago, maybe two.
Could you tell us how Richard first got interested in music?
My father learned him his first tune, and the name of the tune was St. Patrick's Day, on St. Patrick's Day, down at Temple Cross, that's near Ballinacargy. From there on, he never looked back. He learned himself then after that.
And his father was a piper, and he used to let this, they used to call him Dick Major. And this night, he knew there was some ass pipes when he used them up at the play, and the father did. And this night he went out, he was after playing the pipes, and the young lad was there listening to him, and he went past Norham Marks, but the father went off to rambling. And when he was a good while gone, this young lad got up, and he went out and looked around him, and the father was hid. But when he seen no one knock around, he went in and he got the pipes and he put them on him. So the father nearly dropped. He rushed in, and when he rushed in, the young lad went to open the pipes, you see, and all, and oh, he said, Dickie, he said, lay them on you and never take them off. Yeah.
Of Ballymahon to serve his time to be a shop assistant. He went from there to Dublin in the same position. Then he went to Cork. I don't know if he was transferred there, but he went from there to Belfast, and that's where he settled down.
Well, he served his time in Ballymahon, and he went from that to... He got a job in... He was in Dublin for years. And how he came to go to Belfast was this. Yeah, the Aberdeen, and our Aberdeen was Viceroy in Ireland at the time. He was always holding feet and jarring parties for the kids up there. But she got a hold of him one way or another, who's been a Scotch woman, I suppose, she was attracted to the pipes, you see. And she got him a job, who I wanted to roll walker in Ireland, in Belfast. That's how we got to Belfast, you know.
Through his connection with Lady Aberdeen, O'Mealy was given the fairly prestigious appointment of chief floor walker with John Arnott and Company in Bridge Street, right in the centre of Belfast. Before he came north, however, and as well as his time in Dublin, it seems that he also spent some time in Cork, and we know that in 1897 he was living in Boyle, County Roscommon. The competitors for the Feis Ceoil in Dublin of 1897 included Richard L. Mealy, with an address at Boyle. Interesting to note that there was no O before the Mealy at that stage. As well as competing, he also played at the concert, and the records for the Feis Ceoil of that year tell us that the tunes he played were The Lad That I Love and Love Among the Roses. When he came to Belfast around the turn of the present century, he was living in Edinburgh Street just off the Lisburn Road, and he lived well. He was a good friend of Roger Casement, and Casement presented O'Mealy with a valuable ornate walking cane. O'Mealy became something of a celebrity, playing at musical functions all over the north, and as the newspaper cuttings of the day show, he mixed with the well-to-do.
The British Association in Belfast, Lord Shaftesbury's Garden Party, September 1902. Mr. R. L. O'Mealy, a well-known Irish piper, was present, clad in his picturesque costume, and the visitors from England and Scotland were especially interested in this clever musician and in the instrument which he knows how to use with such effect.
When playing in public, O'Mealy used to dress up in elaborate 19th century costume. He was clad in such attire at the Munster Fish in the early years of the century. One of those who heard him there was Eamon Kant, and as we read in An Peabody, 1902, Kant was far from impressed with O'Mealy's sense of dress. He wrote, "Professor Thompson of Cork and Mr. Mealy of Belfast, also a professor, played at the evening concerts upon the Union Pipes. Thompson was wretched, and Mealy spoiled his playing by the ridiculous costume he wore. A long-tailed coat, a yellow knee breeches, blue stocking and buckled shoes, not forgetting a patch near the throat which was covered by a loose cloth." Well, dressed like that, he certainly must have been a colourful character, to say the least. Wilbert Garvin is a Belfast man who lives in Kells, not far from Ballymena in County Antrim. A piper and pipe maker himself, he takes a special interest in O'Mealy's work, and over the years has amassed an interesting collection of tools and papers which belonged to O'Mealy. The papers are of special interest, as they record the names of some of the pipers who did business with O'Mealy in the early years of the present century.
Well, these papers, as you see, Robert, they make up a mixture of a whole lot of things. There are brown paper templates of everything. There are all sorts and bits of envelopes. He just wrote on everything that was that he could lay his hands on. And we can also look through all the names of pipes that he obviously worked on. And I've got about 17 names of pipers, most of whom I had never heard of or can't find out who they actually were. So there were many people who came, brought their pipes to be repaired, certainly. None of these pipes appear from the drawings to be O'Mealy's own instruments. So he was very much a repairer as well as a maker of his own sets.
Can you just read out some of the names there you have?
There's Tootle, or Tootle, Mackay, Gildas, who we do know about, William Hope, that we know about, Congdon, Neil, Coyle, Cramsey, Ryan, Hollywood, Boyce, Southwell, Ward, Savage, Delap, Maher, and a Miss Johnson, a rather infamous Miss Johnson I know, who came from Carnlough. So those are basically the names. Some of them we do know. For example, I have a letter here from Southwell of 7 Queen Street, Newry, and the date is the 4th of May, 1926. John Southwell. "Dear Mr. O'Mealy, received your letter regarding the Ullin pipes material and make. I would prefer the ebony or dark rosewood with the full and complete set of regulators. You state in your letter that it is a long time since you played at a concert in Newry. I'm sorry to say that all the concerts that were held recently were of the modern and cheap variety, with practically little or no consideration given to our native songs or music. Let me know about the price of instrument."
Serious-minded craftsman, O'Mealy drew out the plans of his work on paper. Wilbert Garvin acquired many of these drawings, and they provide us with information on the sort of work O'Mealy was doing.
Yes, the one thing, Robert, about these drawings are the details that O'Mealy went to. If he was going to replace a bass regulator, and actually this one that I'm showing you here is a drawing of the bass regulator on my own set of pipes. He was absolutely meticulous in everything that he did. He measured every single hole in the bore on the old one, and he then copied that as closely as he could. He even took the key patterns and reproduced those as faithfully as he could. So obviously he felt that aesthetically he wasn't going to do it his own way. He was going to replace what was what required replaced in the same style and so on. A man very much after my own thinking. That's the way it should have been done. He describes every single little bit, down to 16ths of inches, 32nds of inches. He describes, for example, here, the butt of an 11/32nd drill will go up 1¼ inches, and so on. He uses some very funny little words, like tight, or full, or good. Now, exactly what these meant, I'm not absolutely sure, but if it was a good fit, obviously that would be good. If it was full, maybe the hole was a little bit bigger than the drill bit and so on. So this is roughly how he worked. He had all the diameters, he had all the drawings, he had every little key shown in detail. He even had the width of the head of the key down to, as you see, 16ths of inches and so on. So he really went into it in as much detail, I think, as someone at that time would do without calipers and so on.
O'Mealy was one of the rare breed who both played and made the Illan pipes. But when his first wife, Nellie, died in July 1920, he stopped playing for a number of years. He did, however, return to piping, and although he was very much at home in Belfast, he used to go back to his native Westmeath to attend the Tristerna Eireacht, a very popular sporting and musical event which continued up until the mid-1930s. O'Mealy's appearances at Tristerna are still very much talked about in the Midlands, and we'll hear accounts of his trips there from Frank Gavigan, an accordion player from Rathconrath, and Jim Dolan, a piper and pipe maker from Coal Hill, County Longford.
We used to play here in Tristerna. And Rosham used to be there at the time too. The two of them met there in Tristan. And he had a little small pipe, so there was a little hole in the field and no one knew what was in it. He got up on the stage first anyway, and he played a slow air. The valley lay smiling before me, all down through the bog. Tristan the sport was here on the stage, and there was a bog all. He played the valley lay smiling before me, and this little small practice. But after a while then he went over to the little tent in the field. And he took out these pipes, and they were all square. They weren't like your pipes at all. All double. And he had fingers in them, and they were that long. They were like sticks of jar. And he when he started to play, and the regulators and all, well, he put you to sleep. And he like him I never heard.
I was a small boy at that time, but I remember him well. Playing, he had a great set of pipes. He had a double chanter pipes, you know. And the pipes he played was what I would call a flat set, you know. It was a C, tuned in C, there was no thunder concert pitch. It was very sweet. And he was a wonderful regulator player, you know. And he played, along with great dance tunes, he played slow airs, you know. And a lot of those slow airs he played, he gave a talk, he gave the story of the history of the slow air, you know, as he played it. And it was very, it was great to listen to, you know. He was a wonderful piper.
Thank you.
was Richard O'Mealy playing the Sligo Lasses. It's taken from one of the records he made for the BBC in Belfast in August 1943, and we'd like to thank the BBC for making these examples of O'Mealy's piping available to us. Strangely enough, he never broadcast from Radio Éireann, but he did quite a lot of playing on BBC Northern Ireland. What isn't widely known is that two of these BBC recordings were released on a commercial 78 record in the early 1940s by the UNESCO organisation as part of a series of folk music records from around the world. Victor O'Mealy was aware of the BBC radio programmes in which his uncle took part, so what does he remember about them?
He used to play on BBC in the early 1930s for half an hour on a children's programme.
He'd play the pipes at this programme?
Oh yes, for half an hour, non-stop. He was introduced by someone, I don't know who it was, at that time.
And how long did that programme run for?
It run for half an hour every Monday evening, from 5 to 8:30. From 1933, 34 and 35.
O'Mealy kept fastidious notes of everything related to his piping and pipe making. And thanks to James McIntosh, a Belfast piper living in Mallaig, County Down, we know exactly what tunes O'Mealy played in some of his broadcasts. O'Mealy used to write down the name of the tune, beside it he'd notate the first 2 or 3 bars, and he'd bring this slip of paper into the studio with him. James McIntosh has many of these slips of paper today, and we can tell, for example, that in the Children's Hour programme on the 16th of March 1935, O'Mealy played The Flogan Ree, Erin Is My Home, and The Cork Hornpipe.
It's the first tune he played when he broadcast on the BBC in the 1930s. He played The Cork Hornpipe. That was the first tune he played.
Work by any standards, and certainly a remarkable piece of playing for a man who was 2 months short of his 70th birthday when that recording was made. Good and all as O'Mealy's recordings are, Mick Kilmurry claims that they fail to show him at his best.
I wouldn't compare the two playing, no. A mighty difference. You know, one was failing and getting bet, you know, it's hard to understand this thing. I heard several fellas got bet, fiddlers and all sorts of fellas, you know, how they get hold. They do the throw, you know. He played an ice throw for us, and that's one thing that happened to him when he gets older. You know. The record is faster. He used to play fast, I'll admit that, but the records are faster, you know. And something you both know the same.
You think he was a better player than the record show?
Yeah, I do. Because I heard him, of course, so often, and often listening to him for 3 hours at a time.
So far we've heard something of O'Mealy's background as well as several examples of his music. But what sort of a man was Richard O'Mealy?
Regarding R.L. O'Mealy himself and what sort of a person he was, you hear all sorts of stories. But certainly he had a lot in common with many of the older pipe makers and pipers. They were the source of all knowledge and all truth, and everybody else was wrong. So they're certainly pretty dogmatic in their approach to piping. He appeared to be a rather stern individual. People that went to him either to learn the pipes or to get some part made, he always kept his distance, and he certainly liked to dress up, and when people came from lessons, the story goes that he got the long coat on and from old photographs, certainly, we know that he liked to dress up when he was playing the pipes, if he was playing out somewhere. So he certainly had this flamboyant touch to his character. But a little stern, very reserved, probably quite a quiet sort of individual whose expression came through the pipes and was playing rather than in some other way.
Well, my memories of when I was a teenager, that's the only time I ever seen him. He used to be invited to Thurston of Sports. That was a great day. I remember him as, well, he was very kind to me, but he was a contrary man because he was always in bad health. But he could give lectures on music, notes, tin whistle, flute, fiddle, pipes, you name it. He could give any lecture on it. If he was asked a question, he'd talk for hours after to answer it. But during the time he'd be staying at the old homestead at Temple Cross, the house would be full from near and far. Of course, there was no motor cars in those days, not like now. There was nothing but bicycles, and most people used to walk from as far away as, well, 12 or 14 miles Edgerstown, all round. From other counties, perhaps. They used to come to hear him play, and that used to be all night session. So I used to have to sit in the cowboyer. At night, I couldn't get into the house to go to bed.
And would he always play on these occasions?
Some nights he wouldn't play at all. We'd be talking about music, and they'd be all waiting for him to play, but he wouldn't play. Then when the humour would take him the following night, he'd play all night, non-stop. Sometimes on the pipes, more times on a tin whistle.
He was a grand fellow to choice, you know. Used to wear a black suit and tails. He never got from the tails of putting on the tails, on a white front. He used to wear a hard hat sometimes, and a black soft hat. Another thing, he was smoking a nice little black pipe.
What kind of a man was Dick?
He was a grand fellow, the grand fellow. I was an educated fellow, you know, very well educated. He went long time to that college over there. He was a grand fellow to talk to, you know, and a good character, you know. He was typical of what he was.
Some people said he was a bit bitter. Did you find that?
I never found anything bitter, you know, in any lane. And he gave credit for you. And that was just the end of what he was a musician. And a major. He were a class on their own. That's correct.
What was his appearance like?
Well, he was small, low-sized, stout, very quick to talk. And when he moved, when he walked very fast, in a rush. And he plays the same, in a hurry.
Richard O'Mealy playing the Rambling Pitchfork. While he lived in Belfast, O'Mealy changed address only once. He moved with his second wife, Letitia, from Edinburgh Street to 45 Rugby Avenue, and it was in that house in Rugby Avenue, just off the Ormo Road, that he was visited by such well-known pipers as Brother Gildas, John Potts, Shan Reid, Andy Conroy and Brendan Branagh. Sadly, there are very few people alive today in the Belfast area who knew O'Mealy. The best informant we could have hoped to have found would have been Jack O'Rourke, who died some years ago. We did make contact, however, with James McIntosh, who, in the mid-40s, travelled from his home on the Shankill Road to Rugby Avenue, where he received piping lessons from Richard O'Mealy. Unfortunately for James, the lessons weren't to continue for long.
At one time, I had played the Scotch pipes. Then I was conducting a tram conductor then. Then there was an inspector, and he played the Uilleann pipes. And I think it was through him more or less that I had heard O'Meally's name mentioned. And I took the interest in the Union Pipes and thinking of a teacher and all, I think he recommended and gave me an address, 45 Rugby Avenue. That's as far as I remember now. And that's where I met Mr. O'Meally. Went over and asked, could he give me a few lessons? And he was willing enough. And it just went on from there until his death. I only knew him for about a year or so. Unfortunately, at that time, he was in not very good health. And sometimes when I go over for a bit of tuition and that, then he was too ill. And it was just a pity I hadn't been there a lot earlier.
He was an old man at this stage?
Oh, he was, aye. See, he died about a year. I only knew him for about a year. That would have been about, say, 1946, and I think it was 1947 he died on St. Patrick's Day. That's the day he died on.
And how would he teach you?
Well, I never really heard him play on the pipes. That was a sad part, and I had so much wished that, you know. He'd got a wee tin whistle, played over the tune, and then I'd have started up the pipes and went on from there, and if I made a mistake, which was often enough, he would correct me on it and so forth. And after about an hour, that sort of teaching, that was the finish with, you know, the following week. That was about an hour each week we got.
And was he a good teacher? Was he a patient teacher?
Oh, yes, he was very much so, like, yeah, very much.
And would there be other pipers there when you would go to...
No, I was on my own. Jack O'Rourke, who knew, he had another need to go, and it was only maybe an odd time that I made him at Jack, you know.
And what, was it a good house to go into?
Yes, it was quite a pleasant house. And if Mr. O'Meally was well enough and all, he was very jovial and ready for to crack a joke with you, you know. Other times, unfortunately, he wasn't up to the mark, and his old chest was a bit bad, and maybe there's no teaching that night, you know, and I went away disappointed, a young man then.
What about Mrs. O'Meally?
She was a nice person. She was a very nice person. She was usually doing some sort of embroidery there. It might have been handkerchiefs, all hand sewn around the edges, or maybe there's some, like a cushion cover or something like that. She's very good at the embroidery. And matter of fact, she done all the pipe bags and so forth for the pipes, anyone with the pipes and that, you know. And it's a very pleasant woman to know, like, always made you welcome.
O'Meally seemed to enjoy living in Belfast, but when the Germans bombed the city in the Second World War, he wrote to his old friend and fellow piper, Joe Kilmurry, a brother of Mick Kilmurry, about the possibility of returning to Temple Cross.
He was, I said, maybe better. We were going to come home that time, you know. He wrote to Joe, told us at that time, you know, what was the thing it was at home. Yeah. And he was going to come that time, because he had been bombed out there. He was bombed that time. Same with the German bomb that was. Now that was about 1940, or 1340.
O'Meally decided not to leave Belfast, and James McIntosh, who like his former teacher went on to broadcast from BBC Northern Ireland, remembers that even in the last year of his life, O'Meally was still doing repair work.
Well, at that time I had a set of McFadden's pipes, and he fitted a new chanter reed and done some other adjustments to it. Well then, he made me a set of boxwood pipes with one regulator. And they were quite a nice set, you know.
What about his workshop? Did you ever see that?
No, I never seen his workshop. I'd very much like to have seen his workshop, you know. He did mention about, made me laugh at the time, about a cord running down from his workshop down to the bottom of the stairs, and give it a wee pull and a bell would ring. Then I suppose his wife brought him up a cup of tea. see him go down the stairs.
Whatever happened to his pipe-making equipment when he died?
Well, after he died, I was interested, thinking maybe, been so enthusiastic and all, thinking maybe I could have sort of carried on the tradition a wee bit. And I bought his lathe and kept it for quite a few years, made a few things on it, but then just at that particular time, getting married and so forth, hadn't room, so I disposed of it. Sold it to Jack, had known I was thinking of selling it, Jack O'Rourke, and it passed on to some chap he knew.
Richard O'Mealy died at the age of 73 on the 14th of March 1947, and he was buried 3 days later on St. Patrick's Day in Knockbreda Parish Graveyard. He was a quiet man and wanted no fuss at his funeral.
No, it was a sort of private funeral. I think there was only a few friends at it. It was Jack O'Rourke and myself, and there was a nephew of his, and maybe a few neighbours. That was about all. And just walked down the avenue, and I think it was St. Patrick's Day he died. And that was a bad year, an awful bad winter that year. And Mr. Mealy used to say, oh, if the snow would just go away, I think it would be all right, you know. But the snow didn't go away. And then that was the end.
My late uncle, Richard O'Mealy, died. It's strange to say that he had his own grave ready and his own headstone with his name on it. The only thing he had known was the date he died. Everything was ready. He left everything ready so as no one would have any trouble with him.
And so ends the story of Richard Lewis O'Mealy, Illan Piper and Pipe Maker. In Westmeath, he's remembered for the marvellous music he played in Temple Cross as a young man, having been influenced by Tom Rousham and Canon Goodman, two pipers he heard during his stay in Dublin. In Belfast, where he spent most of his life, he'll be remembered as the man who kept the art of Illan piping alive in the north for the best part of half a century, when it could so easily have died out. A good many of the sets of pipes he made are still in existence, and they will be the most lasting testimony of his contribution to the instrument and music he loved so much.
That program was presented by Robbie Hannon and produced by Harry Bradshaw.